This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report, on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, Doug Pollard here again, and tonight we're back in public service mode, so to speak, because we're talking about some of the practical impacts of the recognition of our relationships with the General Manager of Centrelink, Hank Yongan. And welcome back, Hank.
It's a pleasure, thank you.
Good to have you here once again to catch up from where we left off last time and some more questions that we've had from the listeners. As everyone ought to know by now, from July 1, Centrelink will treat our relationships exactly the same as opposite sex de facto relationships. That means if you're one half of a couple and claiming benefit, for example, your partner's income will be taken into account when assessing your eligibility for payment. Centrelink's been running adverts to let everyone know of the change. You may have seen the tooth mugs with the two sets of toothbrushes under the caption, "Couples are couples." With more and more people becoming unemployed thanks to the global recession, yes, we are allowed to call it that now, the Prime Minister and the Reserve Bank have used the R-word, there's already evidence coming in to suggest that gays and lesbians are among the first to be retrenched when staff cuts are made. So more and more of us are likely to be turning to Centrelink for help. Do you understand the changes to your Centrelink benefit calculations for same-sex couples that will happen from July 1, and what do you think they are? Are you in a relationship with someone? Are you or your partner claiming benefit due to age, disability, unemployment, or for any other reason? Call us now on 9699 2949, email us onair@joy.org.au, or SMS 0427 joy 949 to put your questions and comments direct to the man responsible for implementing these changes, Hank Yongan, the General Manager of Centrelink. Joining us in the studio to give us a hand, we have Dale Nelson from the Welfare Rights Lobby. Good evening, Dale.
Hey, good evening.
Now, you've got a lot of experience in welfare rights, haven't you? How many years have you been working in that area?
Oh, just the 17.
Just 17? Well, okay. So, we've got an expert in the studio, okay? So, if you've got questions for him, too. Also, Andy Noonan from Southern Star. Welcome back, Andy.
Thanks for having me.
And I suppose you've got a few things you want to ask as well while you're here.
Yes, yeah, certainly. Our readers have been very interested in this particular story.
Good. Stephen Jones, co-convener of the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Doug.
We haven't seen you for a while, but welcome back.
Why, thank you.
And, of course, Adam Christou, who you all know from here at Joy.
How are you going?
Now, and of course, later on, Kay Sarah will have a more light-hearted look beneath her bonnet at this looming change in our status. Now, I want to start tonight by looking at the issue of who exactly is a couple. Now, I'll give you a bit of background. Almost all social security entitlements provided by the government assume that heterosexual couples are financially interdependent. Basically, if you're in a relationship recognised by the government says you're financially supported by your partner and provides thereby less support. Persons who are married or in a relationship similar to marriage are paid at the lower couple rate. Now, there then comes the question of how does Centrelink define a couple? I just want to read the definition that I got from Centrelink. It says, in relation to same-sex couples, it says, a same-sex de facto relationship is where two people of the same sex are living together, or usually live together, and are members of a couple. Establishing whether two people are members of a couple involves consideration of financial and social aspects of the relationship, the nature of the household, the presence or absence of a sexual relationship, and the nature of the commitment. And then it goes on to say, not all those factors need to be present for a decision that a person is in a de facto relationship. Now, that all sounds kind of very much open to interpretation, Hank. So what I'd like to do, rather than look at it in the abstract, is put some examples to you from emails I've had from listeners looking for clarification. Now, I have one here from Andy who says, I took up with my current partner some years ago and we bought the house we now live in together, and we still live together. We share expenses, we socialise on holiday together, we're good friends, but we don't consider ourselves married anymore. We both see other people and we've done so for a few years. We don't want to sell the house and we're happy as we are, and my partner couldn't manage on his own as he's disabled. We're not a couple, but he's afraid of losing or having his benefits reduced. What would you say to Andy?
Mm. Well, look, as you can appreciate, these sorts of investigations, which we have had to undertake, frankly, since 1948, because that's how old the legislation is that we have to work under, and they are sensitive investigations. And from our point of view, they do involve us asking the sort of intrusive questions that you've just outlined. Now, what we would be looking at is, as you've quite rightly pointed out, the degree of interdependence that this couple have, and some of those factors that you've outlined, in my view, would seem to indicate that they'd have a good chance, and we would question them further, but they'd have a good chance of us accepting that the relationship has evolved from a same-sex de facto relationship into the realms of similar arrangements of a carer and someone who's being cared for, which again, you know, exists in the opposite sex or the heterosexual environment.
Well, I think a lot of this is all to do with that, because the discussion really needs to move on from how it specifically affects gays and lesbians to how it affects de facto couples.
Absolutely,
period. Absolutely. And this is where things start to get a bit sticky. Dale, how have you found Centrelink is on dealing with these sorts of issues?
I think the issue central to this is that this is some of the most, if not the most, imprecise piece of social security legislation there is. And therefore, there's no line that you can draw in the sand and say that if you cross it, your relationship is de facto or the opposite. Nor can you say, in a lot of people's circumstances, that you separated on a particular day and therefore after a particular day, your relationship is no longer de facto under the new terminology or as well. So I think it's very grey, and that's the problem. I think it has traditionally been subject to some fairly controversial and intrusive and from where we sit, unnecessarily intrusive kinds of investigations, and where you actually draw the line in that can be a problem for a lot of people.
Now, I guess also, we were saying that it affects all de facto couples equally, but there's kind of a little bit of a difficulty in this, in that when you're talking about a heterosexual couple, they may well be married, for example, and there are therefore sort of legal degrees of sort of being together and being separated. They might be separated, they might be looking towards a divorce, whatever else. They could be separated but still living under the same roof for financial or other reasons, but it's kind of hard to judge where that line lies with a gay couple, isn't it?
Look, it certainly is. But again, let's get back to that central premise. The sorts of issues that we're talking about have been challenges that Centrelink's faced now for a number of years with opposite-sex couples. The point I'd make is that I do believe that some of these interpretations will be evolutionary, if you like, the other important point to make is that Centrelink customers have very powerful appeal rights, we are not backward in ensuring that customers have a clear understanding that they do have these rights. If there are these sorts of controversial decisions that are made, that were alluded to, then I think what will evolve in those fine-tuning areas is greater clarity will be given to us by the Social Security Appeals Tribunal and other tribunals.
Yeah, but in the meantime, there's going to be real couples caught up in the midst of this and perhaps, in financial difficulty because of it.
Yeah, but I also have to make the point that not all couples are as complicated or as borderline as the scenario you've outlined. And I have to say that, you know, from that scenario as it's been outlined, if we accept that information in good faith, I actually think that there's a that we would defer on the side of not regarding them as a couple than regarding them as a couple.
You're looking a bit sceptical there.
I don't know about sceptical. It's more uncertain. I think that a different decision maker could come up with a different position, and that's part of the imprecision of the legislation that they're required to implement.
Now, Andy.
Hank, is there a minimum number of factors when you're assessing these couples? Is there any sort of... there's a whole outline there of sexual relationship or financial. Is there a minimum, a number of factors that you take in?
No, not really. It really does boil down to a judgment that, obviously, when we make these decisions, they're made by senior officers. Any investigations or... in interviews that we conduct are undertaken by more experienced staff, because we understand the sensitivities and the intrusive nature of many of the questions that we ask.
If I could just add to that, that all of the factors need to be taken to account, but they don't all have to be present, and nor do they all have to be present in equal measure. So any balance of those could lead to a decision that a person is in a de facto relationship or the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Could very well get yourself into a tangle if you've got actually two straight guys sharing their lives to a considerable extent, sharing a house, good buddies, sharing finances, you know, real close mates kind of thing. Isn't there going to enter into a suspicion into your minds at some points that maybe they're just pretending to be straight?
Well, look, that's part of the challenge that this new legislation presents to us. But look, I have to say that we've put in place intensive training programs, including sensitivity and awareness training. And yes, it is quite conceivable that two straight guys may find themselves being interviewed by us.
I think this is going to get terribly interesting. I want to bring in here the whole question of a registered partnership or a registered relationship, because in Victoria, Tasmania, a few other places now, you can register your relationship at state level. It's recognised at state level. In other places, it's just recognised by, the registers run by cities. Are you going to assume that if a couple have a registered relationship, they're financially interdependent?
Well, again, this boils, the same thing applies in terms of a married straight couple. Relationships evolve and change. And the mere fact that a couple have a marriage certificate does not necessarily mean that we deem them to be a couple. You can have a separated couple living under the same roof. Those same principles will be exactly applied for couples, for same-sex couples that have registered their relationship.
Now, you had some concerns about that one, didn't you, Dale?
I certainly had some concerns about that. Normally, in our practice, a married couple is deemed to be under the current terminology, in a marriage-like relationship, unless they're separated from a person on a permanent or indefinite basis. That's the terminology the language uses.
So they have to have a legal separation in place. Is that what you're saying?
No, not necessarily. It can be... and a separation is also a very grey area. So when does a person separate? And they look at the same factors in determining whether a person's separated as to whether they're in a de facto under the new legislation under a de facto relationship.
Okay, we're going to have to take a brief break there. You're listening to The Rainbow Report, a special with the General Manager of Centrelink, Hank Yongan.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
This is The Rainbow Report.
He says, why should I declare my relationship to Centrelink when the tax department doesn't recognise my relationship? Oh, there's a good question for you. He could be in trouble if he doesn't declare his relationship, couldn't he?
Yes, look, that's true. Certainly if someone deliberately misleads Centrelink in not declaring their relationship, then certainly they'll incur a debt. And there is a possibility that prosecution action could be taken. But look, I think we really need to get, you know, and I know I'm going out of Centrelink territory here, but I think it's also important to acknowledge that the federal government has taken a huge step in this area. 84 pieces of legislation have now been aligned. And look, whilst it's true, there are some areas where a full recognition has not been given. You know, from our point of view, we are determined to act in accordance with the spirit of the law that we administer.
I can see Stephen gearing up over there. Stephen.
I mean, it's definitely a fair point that's been raised because, you know, there is a bit of inconsistency with the law as it's being changed because at this point in time, the ATO has not sort of received new legislation and Parliament hasn't disclosed the details. So I think it's definitely a fair call that, you know, Centrelink benefits should only be readjusted once all taxation benefits are in line, because the issue is how do you declare your relationship on a tax return, whereas, you know, Centrelink's already declaring you as such.
Yeah, Adam, we were talking about this off-air earlier on, and you were saying that overall, because overall this is leading towards equality, we were just going to have to wear this.
Yeah, I suppose it's a little bit like that. I mean, I see it as a partially positive thing because we're moving towards equality and we're moving towards equal rights. But at the same time, it's shining a spotlight on a lot of issues with de facto relationships and sort of how the law looks at de facto relationships and how the law looks at relationships in general, and even down to marriage, I suppose. Mm. And so I suppose it comes down to fundamentally maybe down the track we have to reanalyze that entire sort of concept of what is a relationship. Should we be being financed with partner sort of situations, or should it always be a singular sort of thing?
Now, that's something I think Dale is big on there, isn't it? That we should be treated as individuals and we forget this whole couple business.
Yes, I think that's a huge political shift, not to mention an economic one. But nevertheless, it's one that I think we ought to be going down. I think the other thing about that, when you're looking at such a significant shift in the potential of people to actually lose their incomes in a very short space of time, if they're in a relationship, then I think that it ought to have been beholden on the government to introduce a significant lead time, like they did when they introduced legislation to increase the age pension age for women. They introduced something like a 20-year lead time in that. And they, for some reason, they've chosen not to do that in this area, and they should have.
Stephen, there's been a lot of talk in some sections of the gay community that that's happened because we didn't ask for grandfathering, that it's all the fault of us well-off rich gays in the professions who didn't see that this was a problem, and therefore we failed to ask for grandfathering in the beginning. But that's not true, is it?
It's not. I mean, there has been a lot of criticism of organisations such as the Lobby, who have made submissions to government, and one of the things that we're very clear about was to have grandfathering provisions, because we're well aware that there's going to be economic fallout for couples who already registered on Centrelink. That's something that HERIOC, the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission, also echoed. So therefore, when it went to Parliament, it appeared to be a matter of economics. And yes, there's been a lot of criticism, but that's been sort of unfounded, and that's the position that the Lobby still holds. That,
in fact, the government's more or less tried to make that their story, isn't it, that you didn't ask for it? There's been a certain amount of disinformation coming out of the government on that.
The Greens actually moved an amendment on this that was voted down, so I don't know why the government is pandering that line around.
But they have, haven't they? I mean, there's been strong hints coming out of the Attorney General's department that it was, you know, it's our fault, not theirs.
I mean, that happens in any decision, so I don't really see this as separate to any other piece of lobbying that's been done, because they'll turn around and say, well, we didn't get the submissions, but the thing is, they were there.
Hmm. Well, I just wanted to get that clear because, as I say, there's been a lot of bad feeling going around. I've had a few emails from people saying, you know, we as the people who've lobbied for this, haven't taken into account the impact, and I think we definitely have. Dale?
It's just also not uncommon for there to be grandfathering or savings provisions in many pieces of legislation since 1948 have had grandfathering provisions in them. And I think it's not excusable for the government to say that I would have thought that the onus was on them to, if they're going to change legislation in such a significant way, that they consider grandfathering provisions of their own volition.
Now we'll have to get Hank lobbying with us on the next round, I think. It'll make his job a bit easier too.
Well, of course, I'm a humble public servant, and
we administer the law
as determined by Parliament. I do have to say, though, if I can just quickly reflect back on that tax issue, that what the government has said is that it will consider the issue of the tax rules in relation to gay and lesbian couples in the context of the Henry Review, which I understand is due to report within months.
Right.
That's the Henry Review into the tax system.
Into the tax system generally. Okay. Now, I've got another question here that someone else sent in to me. I'm going to something a bit more specific again. This is a guy called Arthur who wrote to me and said, my partner and I consider ourselves a couple. This is almost the reverse of the previous situation.
Yep.
We consider ourselves a couple, but we don't live together because we're both in the closet and we both live at home and take care of our respective elderly parents. Now, we do help each other out with money when necessary, go on holidays together. We're full-time carers, so we don't work. Will these changes affect our benefits? And I particularly don't want my parents to know I'm gay.
Mm. Well, look, the first thing I'd say is if this couple recognise themselves as a couple and some of these other elements apply, and I assume, without it being overtly stated, that there's probably a sexual relationship between the two, there's a degree of financial independence.
Indeed.
Then we would most likely deem them a couple. But and look, the other key issue, and this is coming through in the calls that we're getting as a result of the advertising campaign, is that I can give these people reassurance on privacy. One of the things that Centrelink has an excellent record on, and one of the things which has been absolutely entrenched in the additional training that we've provided in relation to the introduction of these measures, is this issue of ensuring the absolute integrity of protecting the privacy of individuals in this situation.
But that's kind of difficult to do, isn't it? If you're going to be talking to, if you think a relationship exists and, or you want to investigate whether a relationship exists or not, a couple may have told you that as far as they're concerned, it doesn't, but you're not quite satisfied, so you've got to investigate. I understand that. How are you going to be able to investigate without breaching people's privacy?
Well, look, the first point that I'd make is that we would approach the individuals. We would talk to the individuals. As a result of those discussions, some of these issues that relate to privacy might be teased out. And that's part of, the process that we would need to go to in determining the nature of the relationship.
Dale, is this how it works out in practice?
I think that there certainly is a level of sensitivity there. However, at the end of the day, if Centrelink believes that a person is in a de facto relationship, and this is one of the areas where individual workers get little bees in their bonnets, that particular people are in a de facto or marriage-like relationship, then I think what you might find is that they will undertake whatever investigations are required to establish the truth or otherwise of their suspicion. And sometimes that might involve speaking to neighbours and third parties.
Stephen?
I mean, I think this also highlights the issue that the whole law of interdependency or domestic partnership is state-based. So you've got Centrelink working under the Commonwealth auspice of providing benefits, whereas you've got to look at each state, because I think in this instance it would be very difficult to prove a relationship under a domestic partnership in Victoria, because one of the key issues it looks at is interdependency in terms of living together. And even from a Commonwealth model of interdependency, That requires very strict steps. I mean, that's something that the government is moving away from, but it definitely highlights that what Centrelink needs is a very clear and very strong model, because I've been the subject of a Centrelink investigation where it was considered that I was sleeping with my housemate, who was a woman. And it's like, no, we're kind of not. Here's his porn collection, was the response. But it's very difficult to sort of think under what guise Centrelink is going to do it. So I think that's definitely a policy issue that consultation needs to happen with our community about what is right and what's wrong. And that highlights the issue of outing, because that's a very personal and very intricate thing. And, man, they're legitimate concerns from our community. So I think Centrelink should, liaise with our community about sort of what steps it should take.
Well, of course, we have engaged in significant consultation with gay and lesbian and other related organisations, and in fact the staff training that's been put in place includes sensitivity training, which was actually developed here in Victoria. From our point of view, there are a couple of clear messages that are going through our organisation. One, as I said, is this issue of privacy, which we see as central to our role right across the board. But secondly, the other clear message that's going through our organisation, you made reference to people getting bees under their bonnet. Can I just make it clear that we're making it absolutely clear that any homophobic behaviour is totally unacceptable within our organisation.
Yeah, because I remember the last show when you were on, we had some concerns from some people who dealt with your phone lines, who'd dealt with some of your officers, who felt that perhaps they weren't being as sensitive or as well informed as they might be.
Yeah.
And you did say you were going to sort of revisit the issue of particularly the people who were working on the helpline. How's that come along?
Look, I'm quite proud of the way our helpline is operating, to be honest. Because I was new, I knew I was coming on to this program, and I anticipated the question. I've actually spent the last week cold calling to just test the attitudes and responses of our staff. I've had no complaints referred to me as a result of any poor handling of callers to that special hotline.
Well, that sounds promising, Dale.
Yeah, I was just grinning to myself a little while ago with your question about an allegation of a gay man living in a marriage-like relationship with a straight woman. The legislation allows for that. And there have been tribunal cases where the tribunal has said that it is possible for a gay man to be living in a marriage-like relationship with a straight woman, because on the balance of those of the factors that they take into account, they can sometimes stack up.
So it's a
warning.
It's a question of interdependence, isn't it? Because that can be defined in so many different ways.
That's right.
I've got a question here from one of the listeners. A quick question for Hank here. Does Centrelink need to speak with the partner of a customer who declares a relationship if the partner is not a claimant?
No.
I'm not sure quite
it's not necessary for us to talk to the partner. However, in assessing the eligibility of the claimant, it could well be that the partner's income and assets would be taken into account in assessing eligibility, and we would request details of, say, their earnings, their bank accounts, and other financial details.
Okay, we're going to take another break there. You're listening to the Rainbow Report special with the General Manager of Centrelink, Hank Yongan. If you want to ask Hank something about same-sex couple recognition, Centrelink benefits and so forth, how this will change on July 1.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
This is the Rainbow Report.
Marcus has sent us a message here. He says, Hank, there's been a lot of advertising directed towards gay and lesbian people, but are you going to direct any advertising towards the bisexual community as well? And also, will it be possible to have material sent to people without the use of a title such as Mr. and Mr. or Ms. and Ms. or whatever? That's two questions, actually.
Yes, it is.
Let's start, take the first one, reaching the bisexual community.
Well, look, again, from our perspective, the fundamental issue here is the nature of the relationship and the interdependency of two people, and under the new legislation, regardless of sex. So we've faced the issue of having to deal with couples in a bisexual relationship in relation to opposite sex couples, and similar challenges will be faced in relation to the to same-sex couples.
Okay, and the question about addressing, he said, will it be possible to have material from Centrelink sent to people without the use of a title?
I think, look,
A lot of transsexual people and intersex people and so on are concerned about that one.
Yes, I understand that. And of course, this legislation does not address the issue of transgender or intersex individuals.
It doesn't.
This is about same-sex couples being given equal recognition, although the Attorney General is pursuing those other elements. Now, you've caught me flat-footed on titles. I actually think people have the choice of whether they want to be referred to as Mr. or Mrs. You know what? I'm going to have to get back to you on that. I simply can't recall what the rules are.
Well, there you go, Marcus. You've stumped the expert.
Yes.
You were talking about bisexuality just there. Going back to my little script here, and one of the questions that was sent in to me, unfortunately came in anonymously, but never mind, about a guy who's married but also in a relationship with another man. And he helps support this other man unbeknownst to his wife, pays part of the rent on his apartment, spends time with him. And, of course, this boyfriend is on benefit. Now, boyfriend knows about wife. Wife doesn't know about boyfriend. How are you going to handle that one?
Okay. Well, we are faced with the challenge of polygamous relationships already. For example, people that have migrated or come into the country as refugees, where a polygamous relationship has existed prior to their entry into Australia, we recognise those relationships. However, there's a fundamental principle that's applied in relation to that, and that is that the three members of a polygamous relationship must not be financially advantaged ahead of a de facto couple. So the same principle would apply in this situation, and that is that the bisexual male partner would be regarded as a couple. The issue of respecting privacy is one that we'd obviously have to be sensitive to in this situation, but essentially, if the husband and wife were claiming a Centrelink payment, we would pay them at the partnered rate, and then the third bisexual male would also be paid at the partnered rate. That's my understanding of the rules.
Okay. We've got another question coming here. My partner has a recognised disability as well as working part-time and also doesn't make much money. I'm working full-time, and now that we have to tell Centrelink we're in a relationship, it looks like he's going to lose his DSP altogether. And that's going to cause financial hardship, especially when it comes to paying the monthly bills and the mortgage. The only advantage of him having the DSP will be for him to receive cheaper scripts and bulk billing in relationship to his disability. Is that a fair picture of what the situation will be?
Depending on the level of the partner's income, that is quite a possible scenario. But in order for the partner to be excluded from disability support, the other working partner would have to be earning a significant salary. I can't remember the figures off the top of my head, but the income and assets test.
Are we talking about five figures, six figures? I mean, what sort of region are we?
Oh, we're talking five figures.
Right. Just depends which five.
Look, but again, this is about, if you like, alignment of same-sex couples with opposite-sex couples, because they're the rules that have been in place for many, many years.
Stephen, you wanted to come in there.
Yeah, just in terms of the economics, it also highlights the problem that's with one partner losing benefits, that's the most feedback that the lobby has got. But it also highlights the fact that the rest of Commonwealth economic law needs to change, because there are avenues about it, and that's something we're looking at doing more work with government, is to bring tax law forward or try and defer this, because there are other mechanisms, such as under tax law, to have low-income partners, so there's a spouse rebate, and that doesn't exist at the moment. So there are sort of benefits where money is being taken away from same-sex couples, but it's not being given back through the tax system. So it's really a case of that we need to get the message to government that, you know, until there is a benefit, you know, you can't sort of proceed along these lines.
Okay, Corey. Good evening, Corey. Sorry you can't be with us tonight, but we know Corey well, Corey Ellen. How will Centrelink balance its obligation to investigate any tip-offs it receives and a blatantly homophobic tip-off? E.g., hi Centrelink, there's two fags living next door. I reckon they get Centrelink benefits. I heard them saying last night they weren't going to tell Centrelink they were gay lovers.
Mm. Look,
the whole issue, dobbing in, of course, is a very fraught one generally, isn't it?
Well, look, it is. And I have to say that Centrelink's position, because we're custodians of taxpayers' money, we're talking about, you know, total disbursement of $60 billion in a year, and we have a responsibility to ensure that that money goes to those that are eligible. And in these realms, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Mm-hmm. But we deal with prejudice in that context all the time. The number of complaints that we receive in relation to sole parents alleged to be in de facto relationships, for example. The number of inquiries that we simply receive saying, look, my next door neighbour's working and is not declaring it to Centrelink. And in fact, a very routine inquiry by us will verify the fact that, in fact, yes, they are working, but it's been fully declared to us.
Yeah, I can see Dale nodding here. This all sounds very familiar to you, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And it's one of the most vicious things that comes to us all the time, from the point of view of people where that kind of dobbing in is part of. It's usually an aggrieved ex who just wants to make life hard for their ex.
God, I can see the bitchy queens are going to have fun with this one.
Yes, look, I think there's not very effective ways of dealing with that at the moment. We always advise people that if you know who's been saying these things, that you should tell Centrelink that you know who's been saying these things, and you should name that person to Centrelink so that that becomes part of the record, and that if this person keeps doing it, then their allegations will take on less significance as time goes on.
Okay. Now, we're in the general area here I wanted to get to anyway, which is about investigation and so on and so forth. There was a piece in the Herald Sun the other day. Centrelink estimates 11,000 gay and lesbian welfare recipients will disclose their relationships, even though they'll lose their money. How many couples have so far registered? Have you got any kind of figures?
Well, bearing in mind that we're in the voluntary phase and the changes don't kick in until the 1st of July, we're quite pleased with the results we've had so far. We've had 270 couples register, but we've had a total of 550 calls, and many of those have indicated to us that they will be registering at a later stage. It's early days yet, but so far we're quite pleased with the result. And I have to say, if I can reflect on that as well, and I'm the first to concede that these are assessments made by our staff. But what we're finding is that 40% of the callers are positive in terms of acknowledging that this issue of recognition is something that they want, despite, in most instances, they're facing financial disadvantage. About 45% of the callers are neutral. They just accept it, and 15% of callers are quite negative towards the changes. And the key issue that is coming through is that issue of privacy, people seeking reassurance.
Okay. Going back to that Herald Sun article, its usual Herald Sun tradition, it then goes on to say thousands more are expected to keep their relationships secret. And Centrelink will use high-tech data matching to detect those couples after the laws come into effect on July 1. What are they referring to by high-tech data matching? What are the databases that they have access to?
Firstly, let me just refute that. That it's not our intention to embark on some huge vendetta in this space. But it is true that this gets back to that point of protection of taxpayers' money. It is true that Centrelink does extensive data matching with other organisations. We data match with the Immigration Department. We data match with the Tax Office to verify income and employment details. We data match with Registrars General, particularly in the space of deaths and births, because it's not only a means of ensuring that we know if people are potentially eligible and may be missing out, but it also enables us to track down false name claims.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. If you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is the Rainbow Report.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you with the assistance of Hank Yongan, the General Manager of Centrelink, Dale Nelson from the Welfare Rights Unit, Andy Noonan from Southern Star, and Stephen Jones from the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. And also, last but not least, with her own particular take on the situation, our very own Kay Surratt.
There was a time when you'd respectfully ask government to get their sticky beak out of your bedroom. Now it seems our government are not only fluffing up the duvet, they're rummaging through our bathroom cabinets too. I'm talking about the recent campaign from the federal government spruiking the changes to the law, and in particular how these impact on couples receiving Centrelink benefits. The bathroom cabinet advertisement in question invites us to compare two identical pictures, actually a pair of toothbrushes, stood upright in a glass. The perfect metaphor for a couple. One picture is labelled gay and the other straight. Now, quite obviously these pictures are identical, that's the whole point of the advertisement, but even so I've spent far too much time scrutinising them. Surely there must be a point of difference. The gay toothbrushes are less worn or at least colour-coordinated. Perhaps hidden in the background is a point of difference to tell us something, anything about these people. No such luck. According to Kevin, couples are couples, identical in every way. If that's the case, then how do you explain the toothpaste? In the picture, the tube of paste is left with the lid open. Now, I'm willing to believe that a busy professional heterosexual couple may rush out of the bathroom leaving the flip-top cap open, but surely no self-respecting gay couple would. It'd be the end of the relationship. I mean, we have our standards. Finding little satisfaction with the pictures in this advertisement, I'm off to investigate my own bathroom cabinet. Let's start at the top shelf. Some time back, I read in a reputable women's magazine that a lady should never leave the house without the subtle spray of a kindred scent. Taking that message to heart, atop my cabinet, I have on display several beloved perfumes. From lilac and geranium to sultry wood and musk. The latter for when I'm in the mood for a little lovin'. Sadly, that bottle remains full to the brim, which, like the toothbrushes facing away from each other, is as good a metaphor as any as to the state of my love life. Next shelf down, and yes, there are toothbrushes, soft, medium and hard, one for each mood, and of course paste, but there is also mouthwash, and my collection of Nana soaps, stacked in pretty colour blocks. If cleanliness is next to godliness, I'm but a cake or two away from enlightenment. Then there's eyebrow tweezers and a lady razor, a drag girl's best friends. Several face and hand lotions, nail varnish and remover, scissors and nail file, bath crystals, a lonely pumice stone, cotton buds, hair fudge, which I've never used. Please, it's height and volume we're after, not dessert. Contact lenses and a tube of strawberry-flavoured sexual lubricant, should my love life improve. Compare that lot to your average heterosexual couple and I think you'll find them wanting. Like I said, get your sticky beak out of my bathroom cabinet, Kevin. Couples ain't couples. And if they are, then you can be sure their toothbrushes are spooning. I'm Kay Sararin. Did I tell you I'm applying for a position with Centrelink? Kay
Sararin. So there you are. You've got a volunteer to come and help you out.
Yeah, I'm delighted to hear that. And I've jumped to the conclusion that we obviously had a heterosexual photographer.
It definitely sounds like it, or at any rate a stylist, a bathroom stylist. Now, before we go, there's a few things we need to talk about. First off is, Dale, if people want to get in touch with you at the Welfare Rights Unit to discuss any of these things, they want some help, they want some advocacy, what services can you offer and how do they get hold of you?
I guess what we would be saying in relation to these issues is because they're so complex and difficult that it's a good idea to get some independent advice prior to making any declarations to Centrelink. And what we would say is to give our advice line a call, which runs from 9:30 to 12:30 Monday through Friday. And our telephone number is 94161111. Or for people in STD areas, it's 1-800-094-164.
Right, and that's how they can get hold of you. Now, Hank, how do we get hold of you if we want to talk to Centrelink's advice line on this?
Okay. Look, you have a number of options available. Firstly, can I just say that I just want to reinforce that point that Centrelink customers have significant rights in this space, and there's no doubt that organisations like Welfare Rights are strong advocates in terms of those sort of complicated cases that we were talking about. Now, and obviously, from my point of view, there's a lot of information on the Centrelink website, centrelink.gov.au. There's a special hotline that we operate, 136280. It's staffed by specially trained staff who are sensitive to the issues. And look, finally, if someone's lost in the system and if they really feel that they're up against it in their dealings with Centrelink, then you can write to me. And my email address is simply Hank, H-A-N-K, at centrelink.gov.au.
Right. So there you are. You can speak to the head man himself. Now, we've got a couple more messages in here, which I want to get in before we go. Ant says, I find it extraordinary. We ask for equality and then we get it and bitch and moan about it. The law's the same for gay and straight couples. We should get over it. And Tim says, this is going back to what we were talking about taxation earlier on, and how taxation is not equalised. According to Tim, the Australian Tax Office website says same-sex couples will be treated equally, whatever that means, from July the 1st, 2009. He says, search on their homepage for same-sex. So I guess, Stephen, you're going to be going home and doing that.
You bet.
And see what that does say. Regarding this phone, I did have a message in about your phone line from Fiona, who said, I phoned to register my relationship and was told I would be sent a form to complete and return by June 30th. But I just wondered what happens if the form doesn't get back to you in time, if I don't return it in a timely enough fashion or gets stuck in the post or whatever. Is it enough just to have phoned you?
Look, it's really important to understand that that initial contact is recorded in the system against her file, and that's recognition on our part that that notification has been provided.
So nobody will be penalised. So long as they've given you a call, they won't be penalised.
Yes.
If you've got some kind of phone contact beforehand.
Exactly.
Okay. There's another thing here I just wanted to get into from Daniel, who wants to know, why are you running those awful adverts? Surely it would have been cheaper to write to every single customer who was on a single pension or benefit.
Well, in fact, that's not the case. As I said earlier, we deal with 6.5 million customers at any point in time.
And look,
the other advantage of this campaign is it's not only only targeting gay and lesbian couples, you know, to register. I think there's also an important awareness message here through the broader community, because the adverts are not simply running in gay and lesbian publications, it's hitting mainstream media.
Right, and there's one final thing I'd like to ask you. You've had the stimulus package to deal with, you've had the bushfires to deal with, you've had a sudden rush of people claiming unemployment benefit, you've obviously got more work than you were expecting to have at this time. Are you still going to hit the July 1st deadline, or can we hope for an extension?
No, we will meet the July 1st deadline. In fact, as a result of all the extra work that we're faced with, we've in fact just recruited an additional 1,000 staff across the country.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Hank. I'm afraid that's it for another week. That was Hank Yongan there, the General Manager of Centrelink, and as he says, you can write to him. Also, thanks tonight to Dale Nelson from the Welfare Rights Unit, Andy Noonan from Southern Star, and Adam Christou, not to mention the ever-fragrant Miss Kay Sarah, and, of course, Stephen Jones from the VGLRL. Big thanks to you for your questions. Spending the time with us, the show was produced by Bianca Johnston. Technical production was by Michael Bayliss. I'm Doug Pollard, and I'll see you again next week with another edition of the Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.